Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving arts scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down in a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. The conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we are talking to Danielle Reddy. Danielle, welcome to Zero Hour, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Danielle, you have a master's degree in fine arts from VCU in painting and printmaking. You studied at the Art Academy of Dusseldorf in Germany and the Figure Drawing School in Florence, Italy. You have a BA in art and studio art, from the University of Virginia. And I guess you're currently living here in Richmond, Virginia, with your husband and your daughter. Have I got all that right?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of this came about because one day at UVA, you were walking across a bridge that gets painted by fraternities over and over and over again.
I know, kind of a ridiculous starting point, but yeah.
So explain how your art career started.
Right. Basically, the project that I've been working on for a number of years since that moment on the bridge by all kinds of groups at UVA, kind of tagged by multiple layers of spray paint. A friend and I, we kind of noticed these scraps that had fallen off of the bridge, and it was actually this wonderful kind of Klaus Oldenburg kind of feeling bridge.
Right.
It just was this wonderful, oomphy, kind of fat, oozing bridge. But, you know, I never really figured out
fat, oozing bridge.
Right.
I've known people like that.
Yeah.
So there you were picking up dandruff.
Right. Basically, we kind of just stopped, and it was raining, and the rain actually made some of the flakes start to sag.
Uh-huh.
Even more than normal. And we just noticed that they were somewhat, you know, they were actual objects, just because they were layers.
So they were still on the bridge.
They were still on, some of them were still on the bridge, kind of sagging. And then some of them had actually drifted off and landed on the sidewalk. They were flat organic shapes that were thin, kind of large.
Mm-hmm.
Flaking.
Right.
My friend and I just saw these and we thought, wow, these are so beautiful. Wouldn't these be great? What we should use these in an art project somehow. And we were kind of laughing about it, but I kind of immediately got really excited about it.
Why?
And all of a sudden,
why was that?
I could just imagine all of these. We collected basically a little Kroger bag full of full of flakes.
So basically paint chips.
Paint chips.
Okay.
So basically, you know, some of them were about a foot long, but most of them were just kind of tiny scraps.
Mm-hmm.
I just imagined doing different projects, sculptural projects, which was weird for me because I had always been a painter, but I imagined suspending them in space and trying to weave them together. And this was happening for me. It was kind of like this weird awakening or new directional call for me. But actually, I went back repeatedly and kept collecting these pieces. But anyway, that was the beginning of my project in with these paint chips. And basically, I took this project to grad school, and everybody was surprised because I had applied with paintings.
Right.
Painting images.
On canvas or
20
whatever.
Slides of painting images. And then all of a sudden.
And then you arrived with bags full of paint chips?
And actually, it was too funny because actually, Richard Roth just thought, what in the heck is going on here? Because, you know, he was wondering where my canvases were, what all of this trash was. I mean, everybody was looking at me. I mean, people were talking about me having this kind of graffiti project. And it's not really graffiti because it's a very controlled site.
Right.
But now, of course, my work, a wider range of sculptural happenings with my forms and my collecting and actually formally everything that I do.
How wide a range? What do you mean? Well, I mean, okay, so you started
what happened?
Out with
I started
paint
out,
chips, right?
I started out with paint chips, which doesn't were, really sound that, you know, maybe...
Well, how did you arrange them? Did you...
Originally, I started that fall. I started with paint chips, and actually, I have to admit that I had this big hulking friend of mine mm-hmm. help me in the night before I started graduate school, like right. tear off some gigantic pieces from the bridge too. So I don't know. I guess there's a little bit of vandalism or something there in my
so,
project.
So wait a minute.
Well.
So you went back to UVA.
I
to
went
tear
back
off?
To. I drove back to UVA to tear off some more.
Hey, listen, man. We got to go back to UVA. I need some art. I need some art materials here.
Right. And actually, it was funny because these policemen stopped and were looking at us, and I was thinking, I hope I don't get busted.
Right.
But they didn't care. So
right.
So I actually got some pieces.
Because you were doing reverse graffiti.
I was doing reverse graffiti.
Right.
I was stripping
away
the
They should have given you a medal, right?
And,
as opposed yeah. to, we take graffiti seriously and we'll lock you up for months or years or sometimes your whole life. And right.
Right. Well, in so, Charlottesville. Okay.
So reverse graffiti is acceptable.
It was.
It's a little more liberal town than Richmond.
It
so.
Was, yeah. So anyway, yeah, that was pretty funny. I felt quite relieved that I wasn't locked up overnight or anything for that. And I kind of snuck these pieces into
would have been a
VCU.
Great story,
it would have been. It would have been.
Yeah.
Fodder for new art making, but right. possibly. But anyway, I had these big hulking masses of paint. All different colors, you know, uh-huh. all different levels. So
why
didn't
you just
gouges.
Make them? Or am I getting ahead of the story?
I thought of it. I thought I should steal them instead.
Really?
No. No.
What else have you stolen? That I can turn this off.
No. I kind of liked this idea of this kind of casual unfolding of a visual story over time,
mm-hmm.
Just in this layering. It was kind of, I thought of the years and years it took to build up
right.
this mass, you know. It
so
was
is
actually.
Time, is time something
so
that
time was kind of
interesting
to me.
You.
Yeah.
Okay. So the passage of time and the recapturing of that is sort of like an old photograph in a way.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, I was very precious. And I always have
archaeological.
Been very...
Didn't I see that somewhere?
You your... did.
Yes.
You did.
There's a flavor here
yeah.
of archaeology that you're talking about.
Right.
What's that?
Well, basically, starting from this moment or this walking across Beta Bridge, I started there and took the pieces from Beta Bridge and started that collection.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started moving on to new areas and just kind of gathering pieces from old mm-hmm. buildings.
Yeah.
Which I did that for a little bit and in tandem at the same time. The only other way I could think of to collect just these leftover bits of lumpy paint would be to go around and ask painters. And I actually came to that thought when I was at the Art Academy of Dusseldorf. And that is just a huge art academy with a ton of painting students, and it really made collecting paint easy because you know, much easier than dodging police and worrying
like,
about lead.
It's not like a junkie who's going to the Netherlands or wherever drugs are legal. You know, it was a lot easier, man. I'm telling you.
I don't know. It was almost. I mean, I had a hard time admitting to myself that I was somewhat obsessive about this paint
really?
Collecting.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not as much anymore, but uh-huh. These little pieces were just gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, they were gorgeous found objects.
Why were they gorgeous to you?
Well,
maybe.
Just the textures and the colors that I would find.
So they were like mini paintings.
They were like mini paintings. Exactly.
Really?
They were like mini paintings. And the exciting thing about it is that, you know, I never knew what kind of range of colors or textures I was going to get. So mm-hmm. it was sort of this wonderful scavenging, almost kind of treasure hunt
right.
thing where I would go and meet artists later when I started collecting
paint.
So
let's talk about Dusseldorf a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that was something where you'd worked with Daniel Buren.
Mm-hmm.
Who I'm sorry to admit I don't know, but apparently everybody who has any sophistication in the art world
when I mention his name, go, really? Did you work with Daniel Byrd? How did that impact your work?
Well, actually, he was probably one of the toughest teachers I ever had. Mm-hmm. Very demanding, very rigid in what he thought was interesting and not interesting and what was dead, mm-hmm. painting-wise.
Really?
But
because I've read that much about him.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
he really felt that painting was passé.
Yeah.
He was
kind of bringing it about in a new context, you know, his site-specific
reinventing
works.
Reinventing
painting, yeah. And with, you know, with very kind of, well, he's really well known for his stripes, which he basically took this very common material, banal material, mm-hmm. and used it as a compositional element in performances and kind of happenings and these beautiful kind of site-specific painting projects. Mm-hmm. I related to him. He had this one piece which he made when he was really young where he went overnight and put these red stripes all over the subway stations mm-hmm. in Paris without mm-hmm. anyone's permission.
Right.
You know, he was interested in this idea of painting and motion. He put these stripes on escalators, right. on the subways floating by, on advertising things.
Right.
So he was kind of, he's a very driven man and was from a very young age. And mm-hmm. he started as a painter.
Right.
And actually, some people collect his paintings too, which also have stripes.
Do you think of yourself as a painter?
You know, I do, and I don't, and I care, and I don't. I go in between. Mm-hmm. I go in between cycles of thinking about myself as a painter and not. I mean, I definitely am a painter in the sense that for me, the composition and the colors are vital. Like.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They are a really large part of my final project. You know, there's the collecting and the organizing.
But you're not confined to a canvas.
But I'm not confined to a canvas. And
so now would be a good time to talk about a piece. And I know this is always hard, and so I try to stay away from it. But talk about one of your pieces. I think I was reading about Soft Spot. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Well, I for a long time, especially maybe somehow, I was a little bit influenced by Daniel's minimal approach. Mm-hmm. In some ways, he really seemed to reject my very open, free mm-hmm. Work. I was just kind of at the beginning with these paint pieces from
right.
VCU. I would just, you know, lay a large piece on the floor and that was it, or I would kind of pepper pieces around a wall, but they were very free form and maybe more poetic.
Right.
And then when I started working with Daniel, I started thinking more about the architecture. I mean, I would say definitely that I didn't have, before working with Daniel, I didn't really have a good sense of how to display a work and the importance of the work in the space, even though I was trying to do site-specific work. Mm-hmm, and I actually hate this. A lot of times I see people writing that they're doing site-sensitive installations, and I look at the work and I say, come on, this doesn't look like you've really taken the room into much consideration.
Right,
yes, it's on the wall, but so
it's
what?
Site-specific, because that's a buzzword. And
yeah. I mean, you know, you made it there, but it's not a great site-specific work.
Mm-hmm,
but not to discourage people, but I think that a lot of times, you know, it's kind of a trendy thing to do now.
Yeah,
a lot of people are
right.
making site-specific work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we were talking a little bit about when you were in Germany.
Yeah.
And the difference between being in Germany and the way the Germans embrace art and the way Americans look at and generally don't embrace art. Talk about that a little bit as an artist.
I have to say that I really felt accepted as an artist by the community as a whole, not just the art-going public.
Not just the art community, right.
Right. For example, there is an annual show Mm-hmm. In the Art Academy of Dusseldorf, it's called the Rundgang, which means walk around. Mm-hmm. So people kind of stroll around and get an opportunity to look at different students' work from mm-hmm. different classes. There were so many families there looking at contemporary art and talking
yeah,
about it.
Really?
I have some relatives in Germany, mm-hmm. and I had never met them before. And I kind of, you know, my family, that side of my family, everybody is a business person or, you know,
right.
some kind of in-law or something like
yeah,
that. And
right.
Their reaction to me being an artist, they said, wow, you must be really smart if you're an artist. There didn't seem to be this need to kind of defend yourself and distinguish yourself. People
right.
just, you know, you couldn't tell the artists apart from the non-artists
sometimes.
Was
there more support there financially?
There was.
Yeah.
There was. I got there and... you know, there was more corporate support,
mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
I found interesting.
Why do you think that is? Why,
of student
any,
projects, not something like the MoMA, but of just grassroots
but
projects.
Why, do you want any sense of why that culture is more supportive of the arts than ours?
You know, they want to make this lovely cultural center there, and they have. I
right.
mean, Berlin, mm-hmm. I would say, is where I would like to be if I...
Really?
If... I mean, I love Richmond, but mm-hmm. I would like to, you know, maybe have a base
go back and forth, yeah,
there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just very, there's a lot of experimentation there. It's cheaper to live there. There's more support there.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you're going to get more artists from all over the world there if you have those elements. You know, of course, artists are always going to New York, too, because that's where the money
right.
is centered, and
mm-hmm.
that's where the big-time galleries are, and
mm-hmm.
that's where the German artists want to go, to make it
mm-hmm.
in the end.
Right.
But there's just this amazing dialogue and kind of openness and sense of artistic community there that's large.
Mm.
You know, there's mm-hmm. cards for artists. And if as a professional artist, you get discounts on things
mm-hmm.
like travel and I don't know what else. But, you know, you have an a card
mm-hmm.
identifying you
as an artist.
As an artist.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Indie Radio, and we're talking with Daniel Reddy, who is a collector of all sorts of wonderful things that he turns into art. Let's get back to our conversation. You've got a child.
Yeah.
And your child, you think, has influenced your work as... I think every woman I've ever talked to has had children, not only in terms of just your work, but in terms of how you now have to approach your work because of time limitations. Tell me about that a bit.
I took a break from making work for a good half of a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Giving birth was a mind-blowing
mm-hmm.
experience, and being a new mom as well.
Mm-hmm.
And... I completely underestimated
yeah.
everything about motherhood
mm-hmm.
Between, you know, the wonderful ups and the beauty of the whole experience and the time.
Yeah, I remember.
And the time, yeah, yeah. No.
Sally and I look at each other and go, what do we used to do with all the free time we used to have?
I know.
Seems like we spent a lot of time sitting around doing nothing. I don't know. You know, because there's like no free time anymore.
Exactly.
You know?
I somehow had this really naive idea that I could just, you know, that my baby would sleep. And some
yeah.
babies do, but mine didn't sleep a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
She's wonderful. She's
mm-hmm.
a dynamo. But just, you know, I didn't
yeah.
get a lot of sleep and neither did she. And I definitely wasn't organizing my paint chip.
But it's influenced your work in terms of your willingness to be more playful with your work?
Exactly. And playful in the sense that I'm willing to... You know, I've always kind of been a risk taker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, as an artist in today's competitive world, it was
right.
a risk for me to have a child in the first place. But
yeah.
but just in terms of my work in general, I really have found this new connection with my daughter and myself and this kind of familial
mm-hmm.
domestic connection, but also this return to kind of a more innocent, playful time. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
it sounds a little cliched or cheesy, but it's not. But now I have a studio and I have I'm just, you know, inventing. I feel like an inventor. I'm playing with new forms. I've discovered this resin called liquid plastic from Smooth-On that I've kind of started dipping some of my materials into, or I've started making molds of my found materials and replicating them and casting them in other materials and collaging them together with found things. So I have this hybrid of, I have a new kind of artistic practice.
What makes the things you're making interesting to you?
For me, that's where the playfulness comes into. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like a little kid in my room. Mm-hmm. Playing with imaginary, you know, toys. They, you know, my figures, I'm calling them my figures. Mm-hmm. They're abstract pieces of paint or resin or rubber or plaster, but I somehow don't really let them be abstract in my mind. A lot of times, assign my most successful figures in my mind are ones that I can assign some sort of narrative to.
Right.
Or,
well, I was reading that you did something that actually looked like a caterpillar,
right? Which was a big
jump. You really busted out here.
I did. I know. It sounds ridiculous, but for me, that was quite a jump.
Pretty soon, you'll be sculpting in marble.
Could be.
Looks like a person, but let me tell you.
Yeah.
Right. So well, that's fascinating. Well, any shows coming up?
I have a show coming up in Düsseldorf in the fall.
Oh, okay, I'll go to that one.
That's
exciting for you.
It's exciting for me because I get to meet up with one friend.
So where are you headed from here? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Good.
Hopefully, I'm going to have a show in Charlottesville too spring. So
where?
At the University of Virginia.
Okay. Do you want to talk in more depth about your work? Do you want to?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess I could start off by just talking a little bit about, you were asking me a little bit about this idea of deconstruction of painting.
Yeah.
And I kind of never finished your question, answering your question about how do I consider myself as a painter. I kind of had a quick answer to that. But I do think of myself as a painter. It's really funny. Someone just wrote something about my work being contradictory, and I think I said I don't always think of myself as a painter 10 minutes before, but I guess the point of my connection to painting is that I've had painting in mind for such a long time that I actually, sometimes I felt like I need to escape it because it doesn't, you know, it seems kind of like I'm trying too hard. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you figure that you return to painting ideas so often, why bother trying to do something that I've thought sometimes maybe it's a little boring.
Which?
My project just relating to painting and this deconstruction of painting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just this totally hip project at all.
Right, right.
And I've struggled with that a little bit, actually.
Doubt. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, what am I doing here?
Right. What am I doing here? Who am I making this work for? Why did I start making work?
Right.
Why do I need to make work? Why do I need to make objects? Why do I need to collect them? Why not just come up with some completely...
And go work at Walmart's.
that too. But I thought,
yeah, well, why? Those are wonderful questions. Can you answer them? Or maybe not having the answers is what is the answer.
That actually is a good question topic as well. And kind of relates to this idea of defining your work or knowing what your work's all about. And I know several artists, including myself, who really struggle with their own artist statements, and don't even really want to give them in the first place. Sometimes you just want to know right. kind of how other people react to your work without having...
Spiritual? Is that too strong a word?
I would say my art is my most spiritual connection, or my most direct connection with anything spiritual that I have. I mean, I was raised Catholic.
Right.
And I don't... I feel most in tune with myself and the world at large through my work and through viewing other people's work and through working on projects with other artists. This really feels to be my community and my connection to spirituality,
right?
Art making, and you know, and I think at the same time, you always run the risk, but no matter what you do, you run the risk of being considered something by somebody else, like hokey or, you know, but there becomes a certain point when you just have to forget about what everybody else is going to think, make what you know you need to make, and then listen and see, and that's such...
Is it ever scary or anxiety-provoking or...
Actually, yes.
Yes.
Yes. And sometimes it's almost, I tend to be a people pleaser.
Right.
So this is quite a struggle for me. But I definitely try to stick to my guns, especially recently. I've really just been trying to block the rest of the world out while making the work, which is impossible, but just center on my own thoughts. But I'm always terrified before an opening.
Let's talk about that exposure. What is that? It's a very vulnerable place to be.
It is, and it really is. And there's
Why do you feel so vulnerable, though? Why is it? Because
it
can't be as simple as just do they like it?
No, right. And also, it's not just an emotional thing. It's also an intellectual thing, and it's hard to have, someone you value or to worry about someone you really respect coming in and saying, so what? That's my worst fear. I actually kind of like it sometimes when I get negative feedback, which is more negative directly than so what, than ambivalence. Ambivalence would be the worst.
Well, I think we're out of time here. So thank you very much. And thank you, folks, for listening. Yes. Thank you, folks, for listening. We hope to see you again for lunch on the radio next Friday at 12:30. This is Tim Bowen, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM. It's Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.